Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to the Triangle Sports Podcast. This is our second episode. I'm James Biernot alongside Pauly Lascalzo, and we're going to be talking to you, do a little run around some Drexel sports, and then break down some wins and losses from both our Drexel men's and women's basketball teams, which are obviously the big news teams in season. But Pauly, getting us started, women's lacrosse opened up this week. They were ranked number 24 in the preseason poll, a lot of expectations. Talk to me about how the first two games went.
Yeah, so the first game, Drexel fell to UConn in Connecticut in overtime, 10-9. Kind of a little bit of a frustrating game. It was always going to be a tough test to kick off the season. UConn is a team in the Big East, a team that's always going to be good. But it was a tough test of Drexel being a ranked team to kick off the season, and they did fall in overtime. You know, 10-9, you look at that score and you say, very tight game, especially in overtime. But one of the questions that Drexel has to answer throughout this season is who's going to score the goals for them. Corinne Bednarik, one of the best players in the country last season, was responsible for a ton of Drexel's offense last season, and she graduated. So coming to this season, one of the big question marks for Drexel women's lacrosse was who would be able to take over on offense. So that was something that needed to be answered. And against UConn, a really tough test, going in with a little bit of uncertainty on the offensive end probably did not help.
Yeah, definitely. And so tough game. You lose in OT versus now the team that is currently ranked number 24 in the country. They stole the Dragon spot. And then they went out and had a huge win over Wagner in Staten Island, 16-3. 5 points from Allison Drake. She's one of their big returning offensive players. And then Grognani had three goals as well, which she added on. So a big offensive thing there. The momentum's back a little bit. Now you head home. They have their home opener on Sunday against the University of Pennsylvania, number 12 in the country. Drexel lost to them last year, but at home at Vitus, they had two wins against top 25 programs last year in Navy and Penn State. They beat John Hopkins at home the year before. Navy was actually on the road last year. So they can beat top programs. They can compete. A true battle of Market Street. Are you excited for Sunday?
Oh, I'm stoked. I think a rivalry game against Penn, always big. And listen, Penn ranked number 12. I think they were ranked number 5 when we played them last season. But when you got a goalie like Jenica Cuoco in net, you don't really worry too much about what other teams are ranked. This is a girl who is one of the top 4 goalies in the country of all ages right now. She was called up for the U.S. national team, as we talked about previously. Yeah. But, hey, she can stop shots from anyone. And as long as Drexel can get the offense they need, hopefully feeling good after a 16-3 win against Wagner, then you got to feel confident, especially a game at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And she played fairly well against UConn. Not the best game of her career, definitely. But she was preseason All-American, preseason Conference Player of the Year. She's a finalist for the Top Female Lacrosse Player of the Year award. So very, very big name player. Another exciting thing about Sunday's game is it will be the first game broadcast on lacrosse TV for the women's lacrosse team this year. And when I asked Jenica about that, she gave me a great answer, which was, I think it's about time. Year after year, we continue to prove why we should be a top program, and a lot of the times we're slept on by other teams, but she thinks that that drives them, so hopefully that odds against them, that underdog mentality, will be on full display for a victory on Sunday. But excitingly as well, the men's lacrosse team opens their season on Saturday, also at home against UMBC. That'll be at Vitus at 2 p.m. So that'll be another good game, an easier matchup than UConn to start off the season for the men's team. But they're a men's team that wants to get off to a hot start, especially against non-conference teams, and have a better season than they did last year.
Yeah, home opener, first game under the new head coach. Feels like a good situation to start off the season, start off the new tenure with the win. So hoping for a nice display here on that Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday. And Saturday. So they definitely lost less of their core squad from last year. They still have Gavin Kelly, they still have Liam Kamar, who were two of their top guys. But I think they might be in a little bit of a better spot, especially offensively, than the women's team, knowing where they're at. But they also have a tough schedule, a tough conference. The CAA is a really tough one for lacrosse, so that will be interesting to see. As we wrap up our run around Drexel sports, Paulie, do you want to run down some scores from some of our other very exciting contests from the last week?
Yeah, so just quick hits here. Goff went to Puerto Rico to tee off their season.
Very nicely done.
Yeah, they finished in 14th. It was a big tournament, a lot of people in it. You know, it's a little exhibition. Like, yeah. You can't read too much into it, but happy for the guys who got to go to Puerto Rico, I guess.
Yeah.
get away from the snow here in Philly. Then men's squash had a huge win in the Holly Cup over Virginia, taking first place. They avenged an earlier loss in the season to Virginia. And actually, this was a really thrilling contest between Drexel and Virginia. As some of you may know, how squash matches work is it's 9 games, all, and the winner of each game counts for 1 point. So going into the 9th match, it was tied 4-4, and Drexel's Tavneet Mundra went into the final game, and he won in a super close match over Francis Hajek for Virginia. So super great win for them. Great to collect some hardware early on in the squash season. And so as for men's squash, women's squash was competing in the same tournament, but on the women's side, they made it to the third place game where they beat Georgetown 8-1. So not first place, but going on the podium, gotta feel happy about that. And then finally, swim and dive finished their season, finished 8-0 after absolutely killing Monmouth in their last game, or last match, I should say. It was the first time that the Dragons finished 8-0 in a season since 2017-2018. So it's been a long time coming, but a very dominant season for swim and dive. And now they head into postseason.
Yeah, so very exciting stuff all around the Drexel sports. So good stuff there. And that takes us right into our talk about women's basketball. First off, we'll switch it up a little bit and start on the women's side of things. Women's basketball, last 2 games, they split them, lost on the road to Monmouth, and then won at home versus William & Mary, or won at home versus UNCW. They play William & Mary on today, on Friday, so that will be good. The Monmouth game definitely sparked some concerns. They had won 5 in a row heading into that, and it seemed like a lot of good things spreading out the offense. That was a big thing the women's team needed to do. And then Amaris Baker took 31 of 65 shots. She was the only Dragon in double figures, and they only scored 47 points, came away with the loss. She played all 40 minutes. It was a very routine game for Amaris, but with her taking over so much of that offense and having to take on the burden less from everybody else, and overall they just couldn't keep pace. So they definitely switched it up. It was much better against UNCW, but talk to me a little bit about that game, Paulie.
Yeah, against Monmouth, that was a pretty discouraging game. On the road, Drexel's had a lot of disappointing results this season. I don't think that they're happy with the way their road record has panned out. And I spoke to Amy Mallon before the UNCW game. She mentioned to me how the road record was a concern for her, and that's something that was a something you got to work on, because guess where the CAA tournament is played? It is not played in the DAC. It is in DC. So if you can't figure out how to win outside of the DAC, that's going to be an issue come tournament time. So yeah, as you mentioned, this game kind of felt like a game from, you know, a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, early in the season, where it was Amaris Baker putting up every other shot for Drexel and kind of no one else looking like they felt comfortable taking on any offensive burden. I think something that we had seen out of players like Chloe Hodges and Karen McCormick was a more of a willingness to say, all right, I got the ball and this offensive possession is going to end with me. I'm going to put the ball on the ground and get to the hoop. I'm going to put up the shot, even if it's not a perfect wide open look late in the shot clock. You know, being aggressive and saying, I'm going to score the ball right here. And in this game, that just wasn't the case. You had Amaris Baker putting up 31 shots, and the next closest player was Chloe Hodges putting up 9. That's not spread out offense, and that's not a sustainable way to win a game.
Yeah, I'm A-OK with Amaris Baker taking 1.5 or 2 times as many as shots as anybody else on the team, but when it gets up to that triple the shots of anybody else, that's a problem. And they did a much better job in the William and Mary game. They won that game big time, 13-point victory over, or against UNCW. I keep saying William and Mary, excuse me. They'll play them today. But it was not Maris Baker. She had 7 points. That is her second lowest number. I think only the second time this season she's been in single digits. But it was a team effort. Chloe had 17-6-5. Kara, 10-6-5. Grace, 12-5-6. She had 4 3-pointers. Molly Lavin off the bench, 10-5-2. So 4 Dragons in double figures, and none of them were named Maris Baker. That's the first time this season that that's happened. And that's a big thing for this Dragons team. A really good look in the right direction for them. And I think you take that over a good UNCW team. You were at home, you were at the DAC, that helps you a little bit, but this team doesn't usually get close to cracking 70 points, and they did it with Amaris only scoring a tenth of those, so that's really great.
Yeah, and especially against UNCW, a team that's on your tail in the standings, being able to get a win over them shows that in a big game, you're going to rise to the moment, and also shows that you know how to win in a big game. Again, mentioning Amaris not having her best game, it's crucial that in games like that, other players are willing to step up and put the ball on the ground, put the ball in the hoop. And they did. You look at the box score, and Amaris had 13 shots, Chloe had 13 shots, and they led the team. Everyone else had 7, 7, 5, 8, 6. Up and down the lineup, everyone was putting the ball up. Everyone was getting quality looks.
Yeah.
So got to feel really good about that. 22 assists. That's Amy Mallon's dream basketball right there. She loves a patient offense that's going to pass the ball until you find a great look. And yeah, again, when I talked to Amy about this game, she mentioned, hey, 4 players in double figures. That's how you know that's what we want to do. Yeah. That's good basketball. That's how you beat good teams, is you make them guard everyone on the floor. And against Monmouth only had to worry about one player. Against UNCW had to worry about every single player on the court, and that's great.
And the biggest thing with that was Amaris Baker also, again, played 40 minutes. She's going to play every minute of the game, if not almost every minute of the game. It's while she's out there, they just did such a better job of getting everyone else involved. If somebody's coming off the bench, you're going to come in and not run around for your first few minutes before you take your first shot. You're going to run around, get the ball, take a shot. And Amy Mellon's got to love 22 assists. And 22 assists is how you get 68 points. That's how you score more buckets, because you're just spacing everything out more. And I think it'll serve them well for their game tonight at home. Taking it over to the men's side, they will be away at William and Mary tomorrow. Coming off another one of these games where it really is like, oh, we were right there. We had that game. Double overtime loss at home against UNCW. But the game before then, William and Mary again. Great game. Kobe was perfect from the floor. Deuce had an incredible 25-point game. His Drexel high. Yame was good. Ville was great. So talking about the William and Mary game first before we get into UNCW, this was a game where the Dragons offense was finally firing just as a total unit, it seemed like. It seemed like people found what was working, what wasn't working, and the rotation kind of checked out with that. We definitely would have wanted to see a little bit more from Kevon Vanderhorst, but, you know, Ville got great minutes off the bench and was able to add in a lot of scoring. Yame played that key guy in the offense, the linchpin in the offense role. Kobe didn't miss a shot, and he only had 10 points in 29 minutes, but he made the most with those. And then a guy like Deuce, who's usually a facilitator, is leading your scoring. So that really shows me that the offense was a lot more versatile than they've been. So that was definitely a good look. And that makes me feel better for Saturday's game.
Yeah, so against William & Mary, it was a bit of a soft spot for Drexel coming in. William & Mary was 8-2 coming into this game, and they had just beat Charleston on national television. Huge game. Yep. And in that game, their best player did get hurt. So William Mary was down their best player coming to the DAC, riding off a high. It was a situation where you felt like, okay, Drexel you have a little bit of an easier target here in William & Mary. But still, you had to beat William & Mary. They play a crazy style. They are one of the fastest teams in the country. They're going to press you like crazy. They're going to put up threes. They're gonna just play aggressive basketball up and down the court. And I was really impressed with the way that Drexel handled it, especially with William Garcia-Adston. I think we've talked about at length that we're not really sure what his role in the offense always is. Yeah. It kind of looks like he doesn't really fit in. He sometimes just waiting in the corner. Sometimes he gets the ball in his hands, but doesn't really attack. It just looked weird. In this game, it played great. Deuce Drake, not a big guy. And when he's getting doubles and traps sent at him, he can be a liability.
Yeah.
Shane Blakeney, not the most natural point guard, struggles sometimes to have a tight handle in pressure situations, wasn't great. They employed William Garcia-Addison to break the press, and he was incredible at it. And he really looked like, okay, like this is a great spot for him. So not only was he great strategically in breaking the press, but 13 points, 4 rebounds, got 4 assists, got to feel good about how he played in that game. But yeah, again, you beat a team that was really good.
Yeah.
You beat a team that plays a very weird style of basketball. You didn't get sucked into it. You played Drexel basketball throughout. And you got a win. And that's a quality win, taking care of business, really.
You say Drexel basketball, and they did play Drexel basketball well, because you're looking at the stat sheet here. They still missed 12 free throws. But in this case, a good Drexel basketball game means that our three-point shooting made up for that, which it did definitely. 12 for 24 from beyond the arc. That's great. Yeah. We shot 58% from the field. That's great. And then you look at, we talked about Ville. The days when Ville has his best offensive games are the days where it really just looks like he can't miss. If Ville gets out there and starts shooting fast, I really want Spiker to say, you know what? I want Ville to be one of our top options out there, because Ville's a great shooter when he's got the hot hand. We saw in UNCW, he didn't have the hot hand. He shot like 0 for 5, 0 for 6, maybe it was even 0 for 7, but that game's not a game where I want to see Ville shooting as much. I think Ville in that game against a UNCW offense that's a lot more high motor with their scoring than William & Mary maybe is, Ville should be very much more in like a, I'd say almost like focused on hounding on their bigger guards, because they have a lot of 6'6 guards, 6'7 guards. I don't need Ville taking 7 shots. This is a game where maybe Deuce can get a little more shots up, or Yame or Kobe, you lean on them a little bit more, which they did definitely. But finding Ville's role is important.
And I will say this game was the most successful time of using a small ball lineup that I've seen all season long from Drexel. I think it's kind of become clear at this point, Zach Spiker does not trust Clem Edemanian in big moments. Clem played 2 minutes in this game, and that was because when Cole Hargrove was sitting on the bench, which he only played 27 minutes in this game, probably one of the least amount of minutes he's played all season long.
Definitely.
William Garcia-Addison and Victor Patnov played together in a 4 and 5 role. And they were actually really successful in doing that, because William & Mary is not a very big team, so you didn't have to worry about any 7-footers killing you down low. But you have William, who's a guy who's crafty, who's can have the ball in his hands, can space out the floor. And you have Victor Panov, who's a really good post presence on offense and is going to give you great effort on defense, great rebounding. You don't lose much as far as rebounding when you have Victor Panov on the floor for Cole Hargrove. So, I think that was a really good thing to come out of this game, is the successful deployment of a small ball lineup, and it gave you confidence moving forward that, okay, this is a lineup that can work, rather than Zach Spiker turning to Clem Edemanian in moments where he doesn't trust him enough to actually be a part of the strategy on the floor, but he's out there just to be a warm body.
Exactly, and when you do see him out there as his warm body, all he does is block the ball or foul. And it's really like, if we're going to put people under the hoop, we need so much more depth with them. And if we're not going to have Cole Hargrove, that hurts us, definitely not having that size. But it has been really great to see. Cole doesn't have to play 32, 34 minutes a game, because we have guys who can step up and play bigger. So that was definitely great. Turning it over to the UNCW game a little bit, 79-81 loss, double overtime loss. That really is a stinger. Not our first double overtime loss in CAA play. So that, once again, just like ouch, you know, that hurts. But it was another back-to-back 20-point games for Deuce Drake. He was the Big Five player of the week, 23.5 points per game, 3.5 assists, or 3.5 rebounds, 7 assists, 50% from the field in both games, 60% from three-point. So really, really great stretch for Deuce. That makes me feel great about him keeping up with the starting point guard role. And if we aren't going to see Kevon, because it really, even though we've continued to address how much we'd like to see Kevon in different roles, I want to see Deuce as the premier ball handler. I think he's proven the last few games that he needs to be out there for a pretty set amount of minutes now. I think he's kind of developed himself into that as the season's gone on. But I have a lot of really good feelings about the offense after these last two games, because I feel good about Deuce. I feel good about Kobe, even when he's not, when he's taking more than four shots, because he was perfect in that game against William & Mary. He took a lot more shots, 12 shots in the game against UNCW. He had 16 points, 10 boards. That's great. Yame has a good game. Shane has 13 points, but the rest of the bench has zero. So guys who are have like more of an established offensive role in the team have been playing better. I think it's finding who can be the next reign of guys, because you have our five, six, seven guys. After that, nobody else on the team has an impact. And so I think that really did hurt us against UNCW. But we'll see how it impacts in the next few games, definitely.
Yeah, so you mentioned not our first loss in double overtime. That is, you know, it hurts that that's the case. You lose against Towson and UNCW, two of the best teams you're going to welcome into the DAC all year long. You lose in double overtime to UNCW. You lose in regular overtime to Towson.
And you lose in double overtime to Monmouth.
And you lose, so you just, that hurts as a team. Yeah. That is, you know, gut punch after gut punch after gut punch. And A, you got to feel confident saying, all right, we can play with anyone. We can hang with the best team to the last second. But at some point, you need to see yourself win one of these games.
Yeah.
So that is, as far as morale, I'm not worried about this team. I think that they're very confident. But like, oh my goodness, it would feel great to win one of these. But I think we would be remiss if we did not talk about how this game played out. So all game long, it was a real back and forth, tight game. You know, you felt good about it all the entire game. Go to overtime, and well, first off, you get to overtime because Kobe McGee hits an incredible three-pointer to close out the game. It was kind of looked like a broken play, to be honest. And Kobe McGee just steps up and hits a shot with a defender in his face. He's really shown that he is kind of the epitome of, you know, X's and O's versus Jimmy's and Joe's kind of situation. He doesn't need plays to be drawn up for him. If you get the ball to him and he's feeling it, he's just going to hit a three in your eye. It does not matter. But yeah, so Kobe hits a great shot to send the game to overtime. Then in overtime, Drexel stages a comeback to tie it up, send the game to double overtime in the face of a Deuce Drake three to send the game to double overtime. So, you know, two crazy end-of-game pressure shots that Drexel rose to the occasion. And watching that game, you kind of felt like, okay, this is almost like we're destined to win is how it felt. And then with 4.7 seconds left in double overtime, all Drexel had to do was get a stop. And instead, they allow UNCW to run the length of the floor without so much as being touched. And get a layup in 4 seconds from basket to basket and end this game.
Yeah.
So when that happened, Zach Spiker almost threw a water bottle into the stands. Like, he was irate that that happened. But that is another example of end-of-game management in a close game that Drexel just couldn't, you know, step up to the plate and do what they needed to do to secure a game. We've seen it against Towson. We've seen it in countless other games where late in a close game, Drexel just kind of, you know, what's the bed, so to speak. Yeah. They can't, you know, handle their business.
Yeah, and so you're seeing William & Mary towards the top of the conference. We beat them. Probably will be a close game tomorrow. UNCW, double overtime loss. Towson, two really close losses. They're going to play Charleston. If they can keep it close with Charleston, they kept it close and ran with everybody who is in the running, really, as the top dogs in the CAA. So that has to make you feel good, but we are a game over 500 overall and 5-7 in conference. That's not enough to put yourself in a good seed for the tournament, because we're not going into it as the 2 seed. We keep saying this. We're going into it as the 7 or the 8 seed, maybe. Odds are against you. You're going to have to play in that first slate of games, more than likely, unless something is able to change. But we saw in these 2 games, the offense is up to the challenge. That's been the issue all year. Do they have the offense? Can they have that just like collaborative effect where you have so many different guys firing well at the same time and just working in unison, where you're not going to have your biggest game of the year, but you're still going to be incredibly productive with what you're doing? They just need to be able to do it right up until the end of every game, like you're saying, kind of wet in the bed right at the end. And now we're finding ourselves at 5-7. There's time left, but the end game and really just playing a complete game and playing a complete game like the team that's going to win the whole time, we haven't done that a lot, and I think that's something we just have to emphasize as these final games come up.
Yeah, right now you're 5-7 in conference, sitting in 7th place in the CAA, and you could easily be 7-5. You could easily be, you know, 8-8 and something,
yeah.
8-4.
8-4, yeah.
You could be like feeling a lot better about where you are if you just won some of these close games, didn't choke away some games.
Campbell,
Towson, USCW, Monmouth, you name it. There's games up and down Northeastern. If Yami Butler doesn't punch someone in the face and get ejected, you know, how much better do you do? There's a lot of games where it's just like almost, but almost doesn't get you anywhere. So I guess my question for you, what do you think needs to change in these next, you know, few weeks? You got 3 weeks, 4 weeks until tournament time. So what do you need to see change in order to not have this happen in the tournament?
It's tough because it's both sides of the ball need to be adjusted to win out, which is, I think if they want to have any chance of winning the tournament, I think you have to basically win out or have a really strong end of the season so that you can carry that over. Our women's team had a solid end of the season, got into the tournament, and immediately found that spark. We're a team that, against William & Mary, against UNCW, was able to match pace, but also just, like, work the ball around well. Like, good passing, good quick motions on offense, and just, like, intelligent plays. Like, we're not going up there. We're not running the same play over and over again where our drives start and it seems as they're starting, they're ending. That didn't happen as much, and that was the thing that kind of shot us in our foot for so many of these close games, where 5-6 plays in a row, when we had momentum, we're driving the ball up the court, holding onto it, making some weak passes, it gets stuck in the corner, there's 4 seconds left, and the other team's going to go on a run. And that's been one of the biggest flaws for Drexel this year, so I think really just having that ability to just be like there and present and ready to match your opponent you're on both sides of the ball, but like every play, switch up the rotation enough so that guys are fresh. I love what I've been seeing with Vil and Vic under the hoop more. Keep that going. Keep Cole for 27 minutes. Maybe bring down Deuce's minutes a little bit. Not so he's playing 35, 36, but work Deuce and Shane and Kavon minutes so that those guys are fresh. And when you're bringing out rotations, bring out rotation so you can just run and gun these teams. Like, really just outpace them. We're a fast team. We have a lot of talent. Kobe McGee's a guy that I think needs to take more shots. We've been praising him a little bit, but as great as it is to go 4-for-4, you need to be taking more than 4 shots. Absolutely. Kobe McGee's our most talented player. I'd love to see Kobe taking 5 to 6 threes a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the biggest things, is just getting rotations, switching it up, getting in your other team's head, and really just playing like dynamic basketball. That's the word I'm looking for. If we can play dynamic the rest of the way, I think that's how we go far.
Yeah, I agree with you. So I 100,000% agree.
Yeah.
Kobe McGee needs to shoot more threes. One of the things that I've talked about with Coach Spiker is that he told me, you don't want to fall for the bait of taking the good three early in the shot clock when you can maybe get a great look later in the shot clock. And I disagree with him there. Obviously, I'm not the basketball coach, but when Kobe McGee gets a half open look at 20 seconds in the shot clock, I want him to put that up.
Absolutely.
I do not want to see Kobe McGee doing any more pump fake, pass the ball, any of that. I put the ball up because, listen, we're a team that relies on the three. If we're not shooting over 35% in a game, we're probably not winning that game. That's just a fact. And when you have one of the best three-point shooters in the entire country, he's putting up a season, which you have the exact stat, but one of the best three-point shooting seasons.
Second best in program history, 46.1%.
So when you have a guy like that on your team, how are you not putting up 8 threes a game?
I'd much rather Kobe shoot 39% with such higher volume than 46% with the volume he's currently at. And I think that's one of the biggest keys, but the biggest adjustment, I think, is just making it dynamic. I don't want to see the same starting lineup every single game. And if I am going to see that starting lineup, I don't need 7 minutes to start the game of that starting lineup. I think it's really, and when you are going to bring in the first sub, I don't need to see the starting lineup light, right? Yeah. I need to see a team, a one team, a two team, really mix it up. Mess with the game plan. Screw what's worked for a lot of ways this year. Because, well, so many things haven't worked. Screw the game plan for a lot of this year. Look at what's gone well in the last two games. And I think you take that and you kind of just, you mix it up. You try to maybe get some of the guys who don't play as much. Maybe you try to, hey, figure out what role they can play in mixing up the rotations. Because getting in the other team's heads, messing with, just don't give them the opportunity to game plan for what you're going to do. I think they have enough talent that you can do that. It's just whether Spiker will do that. He's very much a guy that's tried and true with what he starts with on day one. So,
yeah,
we'll remain to be seen.
I agree, too, that I'd like to see them shake things up. I talked to him about the point guard position, too. I know we've asked for more Kevon Vanderhorst. He disagrees.
Yeah.
Shane Blakeney, he is very encouraged by what he sees, and he likes what he sees. And listen, in February, he had a good November, Shane Blakeney did. His best month by far was the November 7 games there, where he had 63 points, shooting 32% from 3, 50% from 2. But a horrible December and January, where he was shooting 15% from 3 and 19% from 3 in December and January. But in February, he's ticked back up again, still having a ton of usage from him on the floor, but back to shooting 54% from 2 and 33% from 3. So you like to see him ticking up a little bit in February, but you know, those numbers still aren't indicative of you need to be taking 10 shots per game.
Definitely.
But you'd like it, you do feel good that maybe he's finding his form at the right time. Deuce Drake is really coming into his own as the season's going on. William Garcia-Addison, maybe he's finding his way. Maybe everyone's finding their way a little bit at the end of the season. And what hasn't necessarily worked throughout the season, maybe will just, you know, the regression will hit and everyone will start hitting the shots they've missed all year long. But you got to feel encouraged by a little bit of those signs. But again, this is no reason to not shake things up.
Yeah.
Things have not worked out, and you got to change things up sometimes.
I think at 5-7, you can't be complacent. But one thing I'm noticing looking at Shane's month by month, I just really want you to look at how many minutes per game. If you do the numbers in your head, it has not changed. Shane's usage has really not changed all season. He's gotten more usage per game in February. That's a smaller sample size. But consistently, he's getting 20 to 25 minutes per game. And that was the same when he was shooting 41% from the field, or 22% from the field, or 28%. So that worries me a little bit. And that makes me a little discouraged about my hope for some different rotations. But definitely will be remain to be seen. But I'm excited. I'm hopeful for this game against William & Mary. I think you beat a team by 20 points at home, you should be able to know what you're doing headed on the road. And I think just go down their throat, be dynamic, bring the mix up from the start of the game.
Yeah, William & Mary is probably going to be angry. They're probably going to say, hey, you smoked us when we played at your place, and we're going to smoke you here today. Drexel's going to have A, the confidence that you can beat them, and then B, you know, you had a game plan that worked. You were able to adjust to the way William & Mary played and beat them at their own game, really. So you're going to have to do that again. William Garcia-Addison's going to have another big game. But yeah, that's an important game to win. If you want to turn around the season and not be under 500, yep. not be limping into the CAA tournament, then you got to beat William & Mary on the road. You got to pretty much not necessarily win out, but almost win out.
I don't want to see more than a loss or two, really. Yeah. So, absolutely. And so, yeah, looking at the road ahead a little bit, it'll be William & Mary on the road, then Delaware on the road. That'll be the final game in CAA play against Delaware. Mm-hmm. So long, farewell. And then it'll be a huge one against Charleston at home on CBS Sports, then Hampton at home and Monmouth at home to wrap it up. When you look at that, you need to beat William & Mary. You need to beat Delaware. You beat the crap out of them the first time around. Charleston will remain to be seen. They've kept it tight with anybody. I don't think that's going to be a blowout. And, I mean, Hampton and Monmouth are teams they were close with, or Monmouth at least, they were very, very close with. Now you have the home field advantage. I don't think it's impossible to say they could win all those games. I think more realistically they maybe drop one. But when you drop two of those games, now you're starting to get into the range where you're still going to be in seventh. Eighth place, and that's just not where you want to fall.
This is five games left in the season. You need to go 4-1 at worst if you yeah. are serious about being a real contender yeah. in this tournament. If not, who cares? Why are we even yeah. doing this whole thing? But you know, Charleston's a really good team. You have them at home yeah. on national TV. You are going to have a packed deck. You are going to have all the energy yeah. in the world. And if you can't give your best shot in that game, then I worry about that. So yeah. maybe that's the game you drop, but I really would love to see us yeah. win a close game. You've played to the wire against yeah. every single exactly. top team in this conference. Please win one yeah. before the end
we
of the season.
We need it. We need it. And it's also of utmost importance that two games on the road, you need to mm-hmm. I mean, it would be great to win both those games, but if you lose both those games, it's over. Like, that's yeah. that's the biggest indicator to me that this team is not legit, because you can't win on the road late in the season. You can't win in D.C.
Yeah.
So,
especially against Delaware. Yeah. Last game ever against Delaware, you're riding, I think, a five-game win streak yeah. against Delaware. Do not blow it in the last game. Please send Delaware to Conference USA with another loss.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to send Delaware out of this rivalry with a good taste no. in their mouth. They don't no. deserve that.
I want the worst taste. I want the taste of Urban Eatery chicken in their mouth on the way out.
Yeah.
But I believe that does it for us here in episode 2. It's been great to talk to you, Paulie, about all things Drexel Sports. I'm pumped to watch some games this weekend and break it all down next week.
Yeah. Go Dragons.
Go Dragons.